755 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now.
Hello, welcome back into 755. His real producer came here. We'll get to David and Eric in just 1 second, as well as your questions from today's live room on the Athletic app. Some great questions, great interaction. We did have a few technical blips today, so if you hear a few cutaways and just there might just be a weird transition on topics, don't worry. You guys will still get the picture. Just want to keep you guys abreast of that. But as always, for those of you who came to the live room for the first time today, thank you so much. For those who always tune in, thank you as well. For those who want to join us in the future, make sure you follow David and Eric on Twitter at DOBrianATL and at EOF34 for updates when we're going to go live. And also make sure you subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We usually try to give you guys a heads up when we are going to host a live room in the week. And also, make sure to check out our YouTube page. We have loads of content over there, previous shows, great video content for you guys to tune into. That link is in the description. So without further ado, here's David and Eric. And as always, thank you guys for tuning in.
Evan D., what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for doing the space again. I guess my only question is, how much longer of a leash do you think Ozuna has in the cleanup spot before they either, you know, slide him and Darnell and Ozzie around? Because I know he got a couple walks last night, but it's after that first week and a half of the season, he hasn't really had any extra base hits or anything like that. So that's really my only question.
Yeah, he hasn't been swinging it too well. You know, it's one of those things where I think they want to leave him there, show confidence in him and get him going. But, you know, at this point, I'd agree with you. It might be worth shaking up just to take some pressure off of him. I mean, that's not an easy role to hold down in the cleanup spot. I mean, it remains to be seen. But, you know, you just got to think about how huge it'd be if he started swinging the bat well again and the lineup could really use him. So I think that's why Snit's kind of stuck with him there. But, yeah, we'll see. I don't really have an answer to that one.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Yep. Robert C.
Hey, Eric, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Hey, well, you know what? I mean, it wouldn't be a live thread if DOB didn't have some technical issues.
You're right about that.
I love it. That first one was my favorite of all time. I sent a tweet to Dave earlier today because something I feel real strongly about is something I learned with Bobby. And that the big four used to talk about all the time is the value of patience and sticking with guys, sticking with lineups, sticking with staffs, even when they're struggling, especially when they're struggling sometimes.
Right.
And how that can pay off. And, you know, I referenced the kind of immediate return psychosis of our society these days. And how even with seeing it, you know, 2 years ago, Freddie struggling early on after COVID and then ultimately coming through with an MVP, how last year, you know, we were, you know, watching the closer struggle
right.
And all of us got there. And even then, he really stuck with the guy, and it paid such great dividends. And the last question, even with Ozuna, is a guy who has been out for a year due to his own fault, of course, but has got to work his way back in. He's not going to move him anytime soon, I don't think.
Well, you know, I mean, it kind of goes for me. If he'd had a really bad spring training, it'd be one thing, but they've seen him swinging the bat really well this year. And you made a great point with Will Smith. Look at how much that paid dividends in the postseason. Mm-hmm. You know, having that guy struggle through the season, everybody's getting impatient with him. But what you know as a manager and you know watching is that how bad you need that guy in that role at some point in the season. So
that's
you know,
it.
I mean, it's like, you know, in the bullpen. The worst place to be in the pen is pitching and wondering if you have a bad game today, if you're going to lose your role or lose your job or go to the back of that conga line and be pitching the fourth inning tomorrow. Any manager that shows that patience with guys, It always seems to pay off. At some point, you got to cut the cord. You know, if a guy's not turning around or a reliever's giving it up every time they come in the game. But it's kind of an art, you know, sticking with guys and showing that confidence mm-hmm. in them without it getting to a point where it really winds up hurting the team. So it's not an easy job, but I think that's what Snit's trying to do with Ozuna right now is show him that he's his guy, he's who he wants there, and the team needs him. So give him as many opportunities as he can.
Well, and it's more than that, is that he's got to know. He's got to figure it out himself. And the only way to do that is to give it the time it needs to develop. And right. I think that's the great value of Snitker that I absolutely love, is that when everybody else is freaking out, all of us, including myself, that he is like an elephant and everybody else is, you know, kind of, you know, scurrying around this solid, kind of wizened manager who just doesn't feel the need to listen to all that noise.
Yeah, and you see managers that manage to answer questions. And those guys, you know, their players don't have confidence in them. You know, we would call it the panic button in the bullpen. You'd have a starter that had been kind of shaky. And he'd just be warming up the whole team in the third inning. And what that does is that sets panic and tension and pressure throughout the whole team. And most of those teams, you know, you never really see them stabilize. It's kind of – and I think, honestly, that's why it's hard to manage in New York, because, you know, it's yeah. answering questions from some fans and some members of the media. But in New York, it's amplified so much that a lot of managers cave, and you see the season turn into a shit show and the lineup's crazy every day. And that's just how it goes.
Atlanta could be like that as well, and that's why I love having a guy like Snitker right. in there.
Right.
Listen, you gotta understand that Snitker doesn't give a shit what is being said right. on social media.
Exactly. Okay?
I think people, we get a little inflated sense of our importance, and I'm saying we.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he hears me more than he hears you guys, but he doesn't even give a shit what I say. So he sure doesn't give a shit what people are saying on Twitter.
Right.
It does not matter. It does not matter to him. His boss is Alex Anthopoulos. They talk every day. Alex Anthopoulos' boss is Terry McGuirk. He's the one with the pulls the purse strings. It has the money. What we say out here and what is being said on social media just doesn't matter, because Snit won a World Series last year when people were saying all year long that he was screwing up and couldn't manage. They won the World Series, and they've got the fourth best attendance in the major leagues after being second last year when everybody said it was because they opened their ballpark earlier. Well, they're fourth this year, and everybody will say because they won the World Series. Well, it all goes hand in hand. They got better attendance than the New York Yankees do and the New York Mets do. So
right.
they're doing something right, and they're making money hand over fist. So
well, you
just not going to get caught up in what people are saying on Twitter.
You got to love, Dave, that, you know, when AA goes to Snit, he goes, hey, you know, don't you think we should? And Snit just goes, no, that AA is like, okay.
Well, the AA doesn't do that, though, but doesn't go to Snit and say you should do this or do that. That's the difference between him and the previous regime. He doesn't do that. He trusts Snit and the guys, that the coaches that Snit has surrounded himself. Love now, it. if they're at that midway point of the season and they're 10 games back, okay, then you start looking at maybe can you do some things differently, and you got to offer advice or suggestions and say, we got to get this turned around. But so caught up, and I know I've said this, and people take it as an insult. It's not an insult. It's just fact. There is a football mentality in markets where football is king. And a football mentality doesn't work in baseball. It just doesn't. Where people judge a team from day to day or even series to series. It's a six-month, 162-game season. It's not right. 16 games or 13 games in college. It's just not. So you don't fire a coach based on a series or on a homestand. And people just got to get – they got to at some point try to get out of that and look at last year. I know they can't count on – and the players themselves know this. The Mets are a better team, and you can't count on coming back like you did last year. You can't count on that. And they're not trying to count on that. They're trying to win.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It just hasn't come together yet. This happens. But to act like Snit is out there – purposely playing the wrong guys, or like he loves Marcelo Ozuna, and that's why he's playing him or something. They're playing him because they owe him $50 million, and he's got to get it turned around. They need his bat. They're not going to do Robinson Cano when this is a guy's 30 years old, and he's owed even more money than Robinson Cano was, and the Braves don't have nearly the revenues that the Mets do. They're not going to do a Robinson Cano with Marcelo Ozuna 1 month into the season. It ain't happening.
Correct. All right, Philip E.
Hey.
What's up, Philip?
Hey, what's going on? Appreciate you taking my question. My question, and it's more of a, I guess, continuation of what's been asked earlier and in previous, you know, threads about, you know, some of the recent struggles with that we've seen with Ozuna, and then I would also throw Adam Duvall in that mix. Do you think, and I guess I'm thinking about this because now the Braves just won the World Series last year, could there be an opportunity at some point this year that we might see maybe Michael Harris come up for a game or two? If anything, I wouldn't say not to take over any positions in the outfield, but to, you know, give some of those guys that are struggling, you know, a day or two of rest here and there, but also test out and see how he can perform. Do you think it's just way too early for that?
No, because Michael Harris, A, he's not on the 40-man roster. They're not going to make a 40-man roster move, put kick somebody off the 40-man, add him to the 40-man to come up for a day or two.
Right.
They want him playing every day. Down.
Nobody does that to a top prospect in the middle of a season to give some guys a break and get and see what he's got. When you bring him up, you are convinced that he's ready to help this team and that he's coming up for good. Now, you might be wrong and he might have to go back down, but you don't bring him up with that in mind. You bring him up intending to give him a starting spot and have him handle that for the next decade. And that's so when they'll bring him up.
And realistically, you think that's probably a 2023 or 2024 transaction?
No, it's not 2024. It's 2023. And if somebody gets hurt this year or continues to struggle mightily, and it's late, it's, you know, we're in the second half and Michael Harris is just raking after they promote him because he's still in double A and they got to promote him to triple A, you know, eventually. I think that'll come by mid-season. But right now he's raking against double A pitching. Sure, there's some good pitchers in double A, but he's not doing it at the highest level yet. And it's still only a month into the season. When they bring him up, it'll be to give him a job permanently. They're going to put him on the 40-man roster. They're going to give him a starting job. They're not going to bring him up to be a bench player. So people should forget that. That's not good for his development at all. They'd never bring a top prospect up like they didn't bring Acuña up to have him play once or twice a week and give these guys a break. Because that would stunt the guy's growth more than anything, not playing every day.
I got you.
But he's great. And I love Michael Harris, and I think he's going to be a real star. I really do. And play alongside Acuña for a decade. You know, provided they keep Acuña that long, which I'm sure they will. But Michael Harris, to me, has no flaws, and I think he's going to be a great player. And I expect to see him no later than competing for a starting job next spring training.
Be awesome. All right, guys. Appreciate your insight. Thanks.
Thank you.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Reggie W.
Hey, how you guys doing?
All right, man. How you doing?
All right. Good, good. So the last speaker kind of stole my thunder with the Michael Harris thing, and I know everybody's clamoring for him to come up. My question to you, David, is are there any, like, lower-level prospects that the Braves are kind of high on that we kind of don't really talk about? And, that's it. I saw the international prospect I believe his name is Diego Benitez. If you've heard anything about him or maybe like a player comp. That's my question.
The guy that I would keep an eye on is Vaughn Grissom. And you probably heard of him, the shortstop prospect. He is a stud, man. This guy is a big shortstop. He's listed at 6'3", maybe 6'4", about 210, but he's really athletic. He's not too big for shortstop at all. They could move him to third, but they don't think they need to. And obviously you're not going to do that with Austin Riley. Should be entrenched at third for a long time. I expect them to sign him to a long-term extension. So third base is occupied and you got a perfect guy over there anyway. Vaughn Grissom. I think this guy, I don't know about Dansby long-term here, because I think if they were really set on him being the long-term guy, they would have signed him to an extension by now. And he's in the last year of a contract. So if you're Dansby, they got to really make it worth your while, or you're going to test free agency. I mean, why wouldn't you now you're in your last year of free agency. So Vaughn Grissom, he's only in high A right now. He's 21. So he could come, you know, sooner than later. This guy's hitting in his first year in high A last year. He played 12 games in high A at the end of last year. So this is his first year there, really. He's hitting 276 with a 383 OBP. That's what really jumps off the page. He's only got two homers so far, but he hit five last year, and he's going to grow into power. And it's going to be a doubles machine, I think, in the majors. But that's a high OBP guy for a guy that was, you know, drafted out of high school. And really athletic and can play the position really well.
Thanks, Reggie.
Yeah, no problem.
Cody G.
Hear me?
Yeah, what's up, Cody?
Cool. Hey, DLB, what's up? Thank you guys for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for taking part.
Yeah, thank you. I was curious. Last year's World Series run seemed to put a real emphasis on clubhouse culture with, you know, the addition of Jock Peterson and kind of the turnaround of things. And I was wondering, with all the volatility this offseason with the addition of Matt O, the subtraction of Freddie, the Ozuna stuff, I was wondering if at all, if you could speak on the clubhouse culture this year and how things are going.
Well, just go from what I've observed, being in the clubhouse again. We're in the clubhouse again this year, so you do get to observe a whole lot more than we did last year. I honestly, you know, of course you're going to miss Freddie. And I think what you miss with Freddie is that leadership by example, that playing every day, playing through nagging injuries and all that. But I think the guys that around him got enough of that, absorbed enough of that by osmosis. And I think you're seeing some of that same thing from the guys like Dansby and Ozzy and Austin Riley playing every day now. And Matt Olson, the infield's playing every day. So, Freddie was kind of a stabilizing force. I don't know that one individual has done that. Matt Olson's not really a talk a lot type guy, but neither was Freddie. You know, he was more in the end of his career, but or end of his time here, but he was more lead by example too. So I think the clubhouse culture is great still. I think it was the last couple of years, I think it's been the best chemistry in baseball. I mean, can't really be in other clubhouses to tell you that, but I can't imagine it being any better. And I don't sense any division at all this year for the things you cited. I know people would probably almost like to hear that Ozuna is a problem in the clubhouse, because maybe they would think they're going to get rid of him, but it's not. And that's not to condone anything he's done off the field or anything, because I certainly do not. And there is no excuse for what he did, allegedly. What he was arrested for, but in the clubhouse and on this team, that guy is still an integral part of the team. And he's around guys. I watched him yesterday. He and about five or six of the Latin guys, including Ozzy, were over there yucking it up for 30 minutes in the clubhouse, having the time of their lives. I mean, he's very well liked in this clubhouse, and they embraced him from the time he got back. Olson, everybody likes Olson. He's, you know, you don't even know he's there. He's kind of a guy over there, just does his thing, talks to everybody. He's really pleasant. So they haven't really brought in any bad apples that I've seen of whatsoever. So I think as long as Alex is a GM, that the clubhouse culture is going to be strong, because he vets guys and he makes sure that he doesn't bring anybody in to disrupt that. And then he listens to his leaders if they're telling him that somebody is causing a problem. Eric?
Yeah, I think it just, you know, sometimes you lose a guy like Freddie, and Freddie's quiet, you know, when there's people around, but when it's just the team, he's loud. He's cracking jokes. He's ripping on guys. But really, it just it takes a little bit to kind of develop that when you lose one of the core members of that clubhouse. I think the team would still need to kind of find their identity again. But I do think that a lot of stuff that Freddie did and the way we play baseball and all that type of stuff that he kind of preached, you know, I'm sure that passed on to guys like Dansby, Ozzy, Austin Riley. So as a whole, I don't think the clubhouse is really struggling. I mean, you can have a great clubhouse and still go through a spurt like this. The clubhouse is what helps you get out of it.
Yeah.
The vibe is what helps you get out of it. Laughing is what helps you get out of it. Guys that keep it loose, you know, the running jokes all year. And sometimes when you get a
– Hello?
DOB, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, Ryan.
It stinks that Eric got lost because this was going to be a question to him. But I saw some comments about the
technology. Our technology sucks. Sorry, man.
The ninth inning was last night was 6-4. I saw some comments about why not Jansen or Will Smith in that situation. So I know that's kind of second guessing Snit and that kind of thing. If Eric comes back on, I was going to ask him about what's the sweet spot for a reliever as far as, you know, is it? Was it tough?
Well, you certainly don't use your closer down two runs at home in the ninth inning. I don't know of any team that does that.
Yeah.
You didn't even use your closer unless you were leading at home. Now, that's changed in the last few years, and people will use them when tied at home, including the Braves. They do it all the time. But I have not seen a team use their closer down two runs in the ninth inning. Right. Any team. Now, you could have brought Will Smith in. I think, didn't he just pitch the night before? I'd have to get my book out.
Yeah, well, they had the off day.
I'm sorry. In the last game of the previous series, Will Smith pitched in that one and gave up a run, didn't he?
Yeah.
I'd have to give him let me see. That could be your option. You could have brought in Will, but, you know, Snit was asked the question afterwards, why Thornburg? And his response was, we're down two, and he's on the team. So make of that what you will, but that was his response, and that's the way he's viewed it. In Thornburg's defense, the guy's pitched pretty well, hasn't he?
Right.
I mean, Will Smith, Will Smith, he's had 2.38 ERA this year. He's pitching well, and you could have brought him in there for sure, but I think Snit looked at it as Thornburg's fine for this situation. But, you know, it's always frustrating when you bring in a guy who's not one of your – elite back of the bullpen guys when a game is still winnable in the view of everyone.
Right.
I understand that, especially when it blows up. Nobody says anything, of course, if Thornburg pitches a scoreless inning there, but I did not even think for a second why bringing Kenley Jansen.
Right.
Down two runs in the ninth. I don't use my closer in that situation. But, yeah, you could have brought Will Smith in. I think it comes down to matchups and looking at who's there. But if he was a better matchup, I would have brought in Will Smith rather than Thornburg. I mean, there's a reason Tyler Thornburg has bounced around and that kind of thing. He's a, you know, kind of been a journeyman. But he has pitched well so far this year. But that just did not go well. That went off the rails in a hurry.
Eric, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, I was going to ask you, we were talking about the situation of the ninth inning last night, not bringing in, let's say, Will Smith. And then what I was going to ask you is, you know, he hasn't pitched much lately. Like DOB said, he pitched the two nights before. But other than that, he's been sparingly. Is there, for you, was there a sweet spot as far as how much you wanted to be used? And if you sat a lot, you know, over a course of several days, did that affect you at all?
Yeah, I like to pitch the more the better. But, you know, I mean, before last night, Thornburg didn't have bad numbers either.
Yeah.
You need your whole pen to be throwing well. And there's, I know he gave up three last night, but the guy hasn't been throwing the ball poorly. You know, so I, for me, that's a guy I would have used too. You can't use your horses every day.
Yeah. Just going back to that, this is as I thought. I went and looked it up. Now, let me ask you, if Thornburg had pitched last night the way he's been pitching, why would anybody question it?
Before nobody would. Night,
the guy had made seven appearances this year. He had a 1.23 ERA, better than Will Smith by about a run. He has allowed nine hits, one earned run, one walk, and eight strikeouts in 7 1/3 innings before last night. Before last night. So obviously everybody second guesses it when he gives up, you know, he looked like crap last night. He gave up three runs. But why would that have been a questionable move before last night? You don't think that what he'd been doing was legit against Milwaukee? His last appearance on the 6th, he pitched 2 1/3 innings, gave up two hits, had two strikeouts, gave up nothing else. No walks, no runs.
Yeah.
Against Milwaukee.
Right.
Yeah, that it's easy to question every move, but I mean, for me, that one wasn't. You're down two. You can't use your horses every time, and he's still like working his way into a bigger role. Now maybe he takes a step back, giving up three, but he's still been throwing the ball well, and you got to use everybody in the pen.
Okay, yeah, that's the Monday morning quarterbacking. That's one thing, but people were saying, well, since Jansen and Smith haven't thrown a lot, so I was just wondering about that with Eric.
If you throw those guys today, right? Say you throw them today down two, and then tomorrow you need them up one, and they both pitch well. Now it's questionable if you use them the next day. So as a manager, you're never just thinking about today. You have to think about what are the odds we win this game, get back in it, and is it worth burning one of their days on a game we might lose? Down one, tied, or up one, or less than three for me, I use my best guys. But you need guys to step up in the pen and be able to handle down two, down three, and keep it close. And that's the role for me. He'd worked himself into at least. So I didn't have any problem with the move.
Gotcha.
Jacob T.
Good being here.
How you doing, man?
I'm great. Thanks for taking our crazy questions. Watching the game last night, Kyle Wright's been our best pitcher, I think, this year. He got touched up in the third. By Devers Grand Slam there, what did you guys see after the third inning that kind of showed you Kyle Wright's maturation? And Eric, what's your mindset after you get up a Grand Slam like that, having to stay in the game? What are you working on? What are you focusing on? And how big was him continuing last night after he gave up that Grand Slam?
Well, it's huge. And those are the outings that would have undone him last year. And I'm not saying that, you know, that sixth spot doesn't ruin the start. But after you give that up, now you shift your mindset to, all right, I got to eat as many innings as possible. That same thing I was just talking about, saving your pen, saving arms for the next game. And, you know, they got back into it. I didn't even think Kyle really threw the ball too bad that inning. It was a couple of, you know, three singles. You can give up singles all day long. You know, maybe you give up a one or two spot, but then he mixed in a couple walks, and then that one bad pitch, you know, cost you a grand slam, and now the game's blown open. But I still thought he did a great job staying in that game, not getting down on himself and getting through that outing. And those are the outings in the past that,
yeah,
you know, he probably doesn't even get out of that inning. They got to yank him, and now your pen's set back for the next day too.
What I was encouraged about too was how immediately he went and talked to Kranitz and to Sal Fasano, the catching coach, who has incredible insight into a lot of things. And he had real understanding of what he did wrong. He said he was too fine on those walks.
Yep.
You know, he had a four pitch walk. He said that was just non-competitive. He was trying to be too fine. And then he got ahead of Jackie Bradley, 1-2, and walked him to bring in a run. And he said that's when he was way too fine with those guys instead of trusting his stuff. And then on the other hand, he tried to be too aggressive with Devers and throws him
right down the middle.
Yeah, down the middle fastball, four seamer. He said I should have been a little more passive, as he should said with him. So he had a kind of reversed on how he should approach those guys. But I thought it was kind of encouraging that he recognized that so soon afterwards, and rather than just having no answers like he would have in the past, he would have kind of been searching for answers in that situation.
Right.
It seemed like he fully understood what he did wrong.
Yeah, agreed. Aaron N.
Aaron N. Hey guys, thanks for taking my question. Two things. One, I live in Rome, so I've seen Vaughn Grissom play, and he is a stud.
There you go.
I also wanted to ask you, Eric, I listened to the podcast the other day, and I loved your insight on Tyler's Matzik's arm and the dead arm situation possibly. So I just wanted to ask how impressive was his performance last night? Was that a good step forward for him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's you're always building off momentum, right? And you're always as good as your last at bat or your last inning pitched. So for him to just come out, have a clean one, and that gives him a chance to put it behind him. You know, when you're worried about possibly you know, continuing to walk guys, continuing to have these struggles. Anytime you can just throw up a clean inning, you can completely put it behind you. And I feel like he did that last night.
What was really encouraging for both him and the Braves was that his velocity actually ticked up as that inning yep. went on. So he wasn't being, you know, like Eric pointed out the other day when he was trying to aim it and he wasn't really letting it eat, as they say. Last night he kind of went the reverse way. So it seemed like he was getting his confidence back as far as not trying to aim it and really. And that's when we saw the velo ticking up as that inning progressed. So I thought that was pretty big last night for him to get through the inning period, because he walked off in the middle of an inning his previous two appearances where he walked five guys, you know, in while recording three outs total. So last night to get through an inning was, I think, a big step forward for him, and also to have the velo tick up.
Yeah, and that's the benefit of working in that, you know, that work inning, that inning with no pressure yeah. where he can just work through it and try to throw some pitches, get back in the zone, see he can get outs and get back to being aggressive. And I think he did that last night.
Yeah, that was a good game to get him in with that game out of hand at the time. And
those innings are really important.
Guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
Talon B.
What's going on, guys?
What's up?
So I know we touched on a prospect a little earlier, Michael Harris, but another prospect that I am curious about is Drew Waters. You know, he came up last year, or not came up, but he was talked about heavily last year as being the next big thing with Pache, and just haven't seen anything from him. I know he went down with, I think, a hammy earlier this season, but came back and still had the same power. I'm wondering if we'll get to see him before the end of the season if the corner outfielders continue to not produce as well as we had hoped.
Okay, well, he was the next big thing. It was more, you know, a couple of years ago, because last year's stock really dipped, because he had a pretty bad year at Gwinnett last year, if you looked at it. 22 years old. He had been at Gwinnett for 26 games the previous year, or 2019, rather, because there was no previous in 2020. There was no minor leagues. He spent the year at the alternate site, and I think he's one of those guys that actually got hurt by not having minor league games in 2020, where it helped a guy like Michael Harris facing major league pitching and triple-A pitching at the alternate site instead of being an A-ball like Harris would have been. I thought Drew Waters was hurt by it because he would have been in double-A that year and maybe even moved up to triple-A by the end of the year if there had been a season in 2020. So he comes back last year, 2021, at Gwinnett, and the numbers were just pretty bad. He hit 240, 329 OBP, 710 OPS. He had 11 homers. But the real problem was he had 142 strikeouts with 42 walks in 459 plate appearances in AAA last year. That's bad, man. That's a terrible whiff rate. So they wanted to see him get the whiff rate down, get the contact rate up. He was having a pretty good spring this year and impressing in very limited time before he pulled the hammy. And it was pretty bad because he started the season on the IL this year at Triple-A and was on it for about 2 or 3 weeks. So he comes off. He had a short rehab stint in Rome, played three games down there, hit a home run down there, hit 364, 417 OBP down there. So that was good three games. Then he came up, played first game with Gwinnett. He goes 4-for-4 with a homer, I think it was. Yeah, with a homer. Then hurts the hamstring again, or has soreness the net before the next game. So they sat him as precautionary for a couple of games. Then he plays a game, goes 0-for-4. So he's played four games now at Gwinnett this year, and he's hitting. I mean, he had that 4-for-4 game, so he's gone, 3-for-15 since then. But he's hitting 368, five strikeouts, no walks, got a home run, 895 OPS. OPS doesn't really matter in four games. But my point is, he's played very little this year because of the hamstring. He can't stay healthy. But when he does, he needs to play for a sustained period and show that the contact rate is up and that he's not going to strike out every two at-bats or every three at-bats. Because if you're striking out every three at-bats in AAA, I mean, they're not going to have confidence that you can come up and trip to majors and hit regardless of how much talent you have. Because he's got a lot of talent, as we know. He's got all the tools in the world. But it's just got to stop striking out so much and draw a walk now and then, you know, and just get on base more. But main thing is he needs to be healthy right now. And so far, then I can't think about bringing him up while he's still, you know, playing. He's a day-to-day thing with the hamstring. He's only played four games in AAA this year. If he has a good run, he plays well for a month or so, sure, they know him well enough that they would bring him up. They'd love to do that. They'd love to see him have a good run to be able to bring the guy up, but he just hasn't been ready yet to do that with.
Yeah, and you don't want to call a guy up, and especially if he's nursing something, and risk burning service time if he comes up and pulls it in the big leagues. You know, you're going to have to prove your health in the minors first.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Ben R. What's up, Ben?
Oh, hey, man. thanks for doing this. This is really cool feature here with the technical difficulties and all. Y'all talked last week about Spencer Strider's usage. And just, you know, maybe they were running out of time to stretch him out. I wondered if that might have some more to do with kind of saving his innings for September. I think he only threw about 96 last year, so I just didn't know what they were looking at for just as far as a limit for him this year for the next step up.
Well, they are using him the way they're using him, with an eye on the innings and also how he can help the team while keeping the innings under control. So, but I asked Snit that. Specifically, he was asked about, you know, do you not want to start him because of the fact that he only pitched, you know, under 100 innings last year? And Snit said, no, that's not necessarily true because they can control the innings just as well having him start as they can using him in this bullpen role that they're using him in now, which is to bring him in and go 3 to 4 innings at a time. They could just as easily have him do that as a starter, you know. That's the way they're using him, in effect, is as a starter. They're just bringing him in after the first inning, you know? So that's why I won't be surprised at all if he gets a start real soon and puts those 3, 4, maybe even 5 innings at the front, depending on how efficient he is. But he is stretched out enough right now to get to go 3 or 4 innings as a starter, or if he had really quick innings, even longer. But as many strikeouts as he gets, it's hard to keep the pitch count down really low, but he doesn't walk many guys. So he's just been nothing but impressive, man. This guy is a big part of the future going in some role, whether that's in the pen or as a starter. Because if he can develop that changeup, Eric, how good could this guy be as a starter if he can bring that changeup along more?
Well, and that might be, you know, that might be one reason they're a little hesitant. He's really living off of 2 pitches. And that's that whole, you know, that's when you get in trouble that third time through the order and everything.
Yeah.
You know, later on, once guys have seen you and the league hasn't seen him yet. But for me, I'm watching it. You throw Chavez the first and then bring Strider in. It's kind of like they're grooming him to try to have that role. Who knows what he's working on between starts? Maybe he's working on that changeup, but it's tough when you're in the pen and you're coming in and you throw innings that matter to risk mixing in a changeup.
Right.
That's kind of something you have to do in the minor leagues, but he's being effective. So you don't want to send him down to work on it. And he's helping the team in the role he's in. So I'd eventually think he's going to get a shot at starting this year, if not, you know, really soon. But yeah, he's stressed out enough, like Dave said, to throw 3 or 4 right now. And I think if they get put in a position where they need a guy, he'd be first in line for me.
Yeah, I think he threw 69 pitches the other night, 50 strikes. I mean, this guy pumps gas and he's throwing strikes, man. He's special. That arm is special. This is a guy that's probably not even 6 feet tall, but he's wiry strong. He's really built his body up during the TJ surgery rehab. And as Kenley Jansen noted to me, because I would have never noticed this, he's extremely flexible. So on top of being really strong, he's flexible. And I think that's why he can probably generate ungodly amounts of velocity for somebody that size and who had TJ, you know, less than 3 years ago. He's special. I think this guy, whatever role, they're going to have to think about it. And they're thinking about it a lot, about his future role. But it's almost like he's got too good of an arm and strength to just have as a reliever, but he can help the team so much right now. And as Snit said, these innings are really good for his development. I think pitching in these innings in big games with games on the line, because he's been pitching in some close games at the major league level, I think is much better for him where he is right now than blowing away hitters like he did last year in the minor leagues, because he really has nothing else to prove in the minor leagues unless he goes there specifically to work on a third pitch and again as a starter. That'd be the only reason to have him in the minor leagues.
Yeah, you're not gonna learn a lot throwing just blowing away minor league hitters, like Dave said, and with his stuff, you know, it's that's that only reason is to go down there and mix in change ups and try to work on that, because that whole third thing through the order is not going to matter in the minor leagues if you're just overpowering the hitters. So I think they've got him in a good role right now. And, you know, there's a ton of value in a guy coming in the third or fourth when you're down two runs and keeping it right there for three or four innings as well. So it's not necessarily like his innings are getting wasted. He's a valuable piece the way they're using him too.
And I like the idea the other night, the idea was Chavez was going to pitch about five or six batters. You're going to bring in Strider and have him hit this way. He could pitch three innings and really only face the top of that Milwaukee order once, because he pitched to the bottom half of the order, then the top half of the order in the next inning, then the bottom half of the order. And then if you still got some pitches left, that's gravy, and you can face the top half of the order again. But as opposed to if you start him in the game and he goes three innings, he faces the top four in that Milwaukee lineup twice and the bottom five once. So I do like that logic where he is right now. You know, you're kind of spoon feeding him, bringing him along a little more, giving him a bigger role. And so far, he stepped up to every challenge.
Thanks, Ben. We got any more questions? Madison M.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, thanks for doing this. Hey, you know, my question, I guess, is, you know, looking at the on-base percentage rankings for, you know, the MLB, I think Braves are in the bottom third. I know with the dead and balls and stuff, that's probably kind of changing a lot of teams' approach as far as, you know, the home run ball. Do you see that, you know, the Braves having to address that, you know, at the trade deadline or maybe down the line in free agency, or maybe it's just a change in approach they need?
Yeah, they got too many big strikeout guys on his team and not enough. And Freddie, that you do miss Freddie there, although Olsen has got a ton of walks. So, but you miss Freddie's patience and working hitters and all that. But really, it's the guys like Dansby, Duvall. I mean, you got those are two of the top three or four strikeout guys in the National League right now. They're piling them up. So, but other guys are too. You know, Ozzie strikes out a lot. For a guy, you know, for a little dude that hits for good average, he strikes out a lot too. You do need to get more guys on the bases, and it's not something you're really going to do in the middle of the season. I don't think you're not going to, unless you can trade for a high OBP guy at some point. But it's something that, yeah, in the off season, I think you definitely have to consider that when you're looking at trades or free agent acquisitions. You need to bring in another guy who's a big OBP guy, who works hitters or who works pitchers and doesn't strike out a lot. I know strikeouts just an out, but it's not just an out when there's a runner at second or third and less than two outs. And especially at third with less than two outs and a ground out could get the guy in, or a sack fly could get the guy in. We've just seen this Braves team too many times leave those runners on base so far. You know, they had a terrible stretch there before the big inning in New York where they just could not get a guy in. And that was shades of last year. And the big difference last year, when everything came together in the last 2 months, that was one of the things that came together. They started hitting with runners in scoring position, and it made a huge difference. I mean, they started doing everything well, but the guys they brought in were doing it. Now, Freddie was doing it. Everybody was doing it at that point. Duvall was, you know, among the league leaders in that. So, yeah, it hurts. It hurts. Your strikeouts are more glaring when you're not getting those big – any guys are not getting those big hits with runners in scoring position. Those strikeouts just become – like a noose. You're just like, oh God, not again.
Yeah. And I think, you know, mainly the approach has to change, and this is affecting the whole league. You know, like Statcast is having to recalculate home run distances. Yep. They had Aaron Judge's at 454 yesterday because of how it left the bat, but it really only went 410. And I think the risk reward of striking out and hitting homers, it has completely changed, because you get a guy on first and second, no outs, and three guys fly out to the track now, or one guy strikes out, the next guy hits a ground ball, and then a guy hits that big ball that gets you the three spot, and now it's getting caught at the track. So it's kind of like it's too fast to expect guys to be able to adjust their approach, because they're getting the balls they want, and they're hitting them, and they're winding up at the track. And that's the difference between a three-run homer and just another zero. And it looks like, you know, you got this shitty approach, but really with the balls changing, guys are going to have to start leveling out their swings and hitting line drives and focus on moving runners and getting them in, kind of more old school baseball. And the fact that it just happened overnight without any kind of spring training or, you know, practice reps for these guys is, I think it's hurting the Braves a ton, but it's hurting every team around the league. And eventually I think teams are going to adjust. But it's not a move you can make or a trade you can make for an OBP guy, because the whole league's used to certain balls getting out and their offenses are built for it. So it's going to take some time for the offenses to adjust.
With runners in scoring position, the Braves are hitting .225, which is tied with the White Sox for 21st in the majors. But they only have a 301 OBP, a 693 OPS. This is where they led the majors last year, OPS, runners in scoring position. And a big thing, a big problem there, as we mentioned, is the strikeouts. They've got 288 strikeouts in 1,011 at bats with runners in scoring position. That just kills you, you know? Striking out with runners in, or I'm sorry, let's see. With runners in scoring position, they are, that's their overall strikeouts. And runners in scoring position, they have how many strikeouts? 59 in 227 at bats. That is bottom 10 in the league. The OBP and the OPS, like I said, with runners in scoring position last year, was where they killed teams. I mean, and they're not so far. They're not doing that. And Duvall is a guy that's led the majors in that category, especially with two outs last couple of years. And he's really struggling to get going, period. So, you know, just a couple of these guys could get going and lengthen the lineup, it would be totally different. But so far, you haven't had more than one or two guys going at one time at all. And again, we saw this early last year, and they got out of it. But a lot of that was making those trades they made in July. Those guys really helped them get out of it, especially after Ronald Acuña got hurt, because Acuña was the only guy hitting early last year until Riley heated up late April, and then Freddie got going in May. So, but that was really about it before they started, you know, after the break, really started heating up.
Yeah, it'd have to be a deadline thing, because there's no acquisitions to be made right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're hitting runners in scoring position. Let me get this right for you. Braves are hitting right now. They are only .216, which is 24th in the big leagues. And the teams they're ahead of, surprisingly, the Blue Jays are also bad in that. So it tells you it's really early in the season. But the Blue Jays are the only team below them that's actually any good, that's actually off to a good start. The other teams below them with runners in scoring position, White Sox, Royals, Red Sox, Orioles, Pirates.
Tough to win like that.
And the teams at the top, the Dodgers, Guardians, Angels, Brewers, you know?
Yeah. All right, last question. We got Chuck M.
Hey, guys, we're talking about the trades that were made last year and the guys that got brought in and what a big turnaround we had in the second half. And one of the words we always hear is chemistry, and that's hard to define. But do you guys think that maybe as we continue on in the season that the chemistry is going to get better, and maybe that's a problem now that's just not gelling real well yet?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to gauge chemistry. It's hard to, you know, teams have good chemistry and play bad for a couple weeks.
Clubhouse chemistry is good, man.
Yeah, I don't worry about the chemistry. And you know what? The one thing that helps chemistry the most is winning. So it's kind of like a chicken or the egg thing. But I don't, you know, it's not like they brought in anybody really new. They got the same core. I'd assume the chemistry is still good. They're just struggling to get the big hits.
May, you're talking about chemistry on the field, like the teams clicking together. Is that what you're talking about? Because the chemistry in the clubhouse is fine.
Yeah. Chuck's gone, but
If you're talking about things clicking on the field, yeah, I think that really hasn't been in sync yet. As the players have said, it's like they do one facet of the game or two maybe, but they don't put it all together yet. And that was the problem last year when they couldn't get over 500 for so long. Is when they pitched well, they usually didn't hit well. When they hit well, they usually didn't pitch well. You know, that was, they didn't really get it going together until after the All-Star break last year. And so far, they haven't put it together for any kind of a stretch at all. They haven't had a three-game winning streak, man. They also haven't had a three-game losing streak. But, you know, kind of sputtering along is no way you're going to catch the Mets, because the Mets have shown no signs of really falling off. Maybe they will at some point, but I would not bank on that. And the strikeouts, by the way, The Braves are third overall in strikeouts in the majors, 288. They're tied with the Reds for third. But the Angels have even more. Of course, the Angels are hitting bombs, and you know, the Angels are getting it done with in a lot of other ways, too. Pitching, I mean, they're getting some big hits.
No-hitter last night.
Trout, Ohtani, and then last year they get a no-hitter from, a 22-year-old Detmers? Jesus, man. His 11th start, he throws a no-hitter. They got, yeah. I mean, Perry Manasian right now is hands down the executive of the year in the major leagues right now. We thought he'd get a turnaround, dude. I said that guy just needed to be a GM because he's the best, one of the best baseball minds I've talked to. And he has gotten it turned around in 2 years, less than 2 years.
Yeah, that was a crazy game last night. You see Rendon hit a left-handed home run.
Left-handed home run, his first at bat ever. Left-handed.
I don't care if you're throwing 54. I have no clue. Some guys are just special.
How do you do that? Jesus, that was phenomenal. That was phenomenal. Yeah. So I'm just looking at these overall numbers, and their OPS is killing the Braves this year. I mean, they're 11th in the big leagues, but last year this was a team that was way up high because they had a good combination of OBP and slugging. So it's really early. It'll come around. But they got to get some of these guys going, man. Some of these guys that were carrying them last year, Dansby had a career year last year for most of the year, and he kind of tailed off late, but he's got to get going now, man, and Duvall's got to get going. They've had a lot of situations that they have not taken advantage of.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes it just takes one guy to step up and get that big hit, and then somebody else steps up, and it kind of builds that momentum. And as you're struggling and nobody's getting the big knock and those big situations keep slipping away, guys put more and more pressure on themselves. I'm sure they're feeling some of that right now. But, again, this isn't a team I'm too worried about.
All right, guys, that's today's show. Thank you once again for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe to 755 is Real on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to follow David and Eric on Twitter at DOBrianATL and at EOF34. Also, make sure to find our YouTube channel. You can find that link in the show description. We will see you guys later in the week with another episode with David and Eric.